This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
And as it's World AIDS Day, Mike is here to talk about World AIDS Day. Morning, Mike.
Good
morning. Good. Sorry, I didn't have you on then. Sorry. Okay. Mike, you're from the Burnett Institute, which
That's
is
correct.
A wonderful institute for the the epidemiology and all the rest of it of HIV and AIDS around the world.
Yes, we have programs now in about 14 countries working with HIV prevention and care programs.
And the figures worldwide, are they getting better or worse?
They are getting better. I guess the increase each year is getting smaller, but to put that in context, almost 3 million people were newly infected with HIV last year, but that is a decline on previous years. So it's getting better, but it's still a major public health problem.
Yeah. And I saw in the paper this morning the new health minister for South Africa. Mm-hmm. She is completely turning around what Thabo Mbeki was saying about HIV and AIDS, and there looks like things might change in South Africa.
Yes, well, more people are infected with the virus in South Africa than any other country in the world, about 5 million people.
Yeah.
And yes, this is fantastic news for people with HIV and people who are not yet infected with HIV. Not only was Mbeki someone who didn't believe that HIV caused AIDS, but his health minister was promoting basically herbal remedies.
Yeah, what I read in the paper this morning, garlic and honey
garlic.
Or something or other. Yeah, it doesn't work.
No, in fact, one of Nelson Mandela's sons took her advice and consequently died from the disease.
Yes, yeah. And of course that really brought it out. When he died, didn't it?
Yes.
It was a great thing to do. But, of course, in neighbouring Botswana and Namibia, they have a great AIDS prevention.
Both prevention and treatment. Yeah, Botswana, keep in mind, Botswana is a wealthy country.
Yes.
With a small population, but it now has about 80% of people who should be on treatment actually on treatment.
Yeah, yeah.
That compares with about 1 in 3 in South Africa.
Yeah. Okay. And where is it getting worse in the world? Where is the worst spots in the world now?
Well, Southern Africa is still, I guess, the place where most people get newly infected in terms of numbers. Of the almost 3 million new infections last year, about 2 million of those were in 8 Southern African countries, or Southern and Eastern. However, other parts of the world, of course, have experienced rapidly increasing epidemics. Ukraine and Russia, of course, have had the most recent epidemics. But I think we've got to watch carefully in some countries where the overall rate of new infections has declined. It's increasing in some populations, and most obviously in Asia, that's men who have sex with other men.
Mm-hmm.
We're having epidemics in a large number of Asian cities.
Yeah. And what's it like in Papua New Guinea now? Because that was a pretty sorry state there for a while. Is it still...
Look, Papua New Guinea probably has the highest prevalence or the percentage of adults infected in the Asia and Pacific region. I actually personally think Burma probably has a higher prevalence.
Surely.
But certainly Papua New Guinea has a severe epidemic. You can't compare it to Africa, though. The virus started transmitting in Papua New Guinea about the same time as, for example, South Africa. Now in South Africa, you have a quarter of the population infected. Papua New Guinea, it's less than
2%. Oh, right.
So, of course, it's serious. 2%'s too high.
Yep.
But some people tend to too easily equate it with an African epidemic, which it's clearly not.
And you mentioned Burma, of course. I guess it'd be very difficult to get figures out of Burma of what's going on. You know,
exactly. That's why I suspect Burma probably has a bigger epidemic than Papua New Guinea, because the figures in Burma are not as good. They're not as representative. For example, I visited a clinic recently, or a drop-in centre, for men who have sex with men in the capital, Yangon, and they were still seeing rates of 30 to 40% of their clientele infected. Now, they're continuing to see new people who are getting newly infected, so the virus must be circulating among the general population.
Yeah. And China is
China's, of course, a worry because of the huge population. So even a small, so-called small prevalence equates into very large numbers of people infected and affected. But China, to its credit, has really taken prevention seriously. They acknowledge their vulnerability. They openly address issues like men who have sex with men, injecting drug users, sex work. So I think China will probably be successful, as it is in most endeavours when it puts its mind to it.
Yeah. Now, you just been to Mozambique.
Yes.
Yeah. And what's the situation in Mozambique?
Well, Mozambique's one of those eight southern African countries where both the rate of new infections continues to be high, and it already has a high proportion of the population infected, 14%. We visited Chimwayo province, which is on the border of Zimbabwe, where one in five adults were infected.
That's high.
It is. It's shocking. And I was accompanied by our youth ambassador.
Yes, I was just going to mention Harry.
Harry O'Brien. Yeah. And, he's a very sensitive, well-read young man. And, he was shocked by not just that 14% figure, but how everyone is affected by AIDS. Mm. Families, communities. He visited orphans that, broke his heart. A three-year-old being raised by a six-year-old brother, things like that. It's just shocking.
We don't realise what is actually happening there, because our society here, we've been at the forefront of AIDS prevention and treatments. But but those countries where they haven't, it's just devastating.
It's
whole
shocking.
Populations, And there was a lovely article in The Age this morning about the woman Celeste.
Yes, we visited Celeste.
Oh, do you know Celeste?
Yes, because Joe Chandler, the author of that article, was with us on that trip.
Oh, right,
And Celeste was, I think, truly an amazing woman. In fact, while she was speaking to the journalist, Harry was sort of playing around, bouncing her baby around, a very, healthy, happy baby with a healthy, incredibly committed mother.
Yeah.
She's overcome all odds.
It was a really nice story.
Yep.
It was a very nice story, yeah.
Well, I think we need these stories. That's not to say we still don't have a problem. We clearly do. But there was a time when people said, no, you can't treat people in Africa with a drug, that you have to take all your life. Well, we were shown you can.
Yes.
They take it just as...
well, why wouldn't they?
Of course.
They're human beings.
And they want to live.
Yeah, they want to live, and that's it. Yeah. And while there's life, there's hope. So you will take the medication, providing, of course, that the medication is available, which it wasn't for a long time.
Now, Mozambique put out an interesting statistic last week that they've just put their 100,000th person on antiretroviral drugs, up from about 900 just 5 years ago. So that's extraordinary.
That's an extraordinary advance, isn't it? Because you've got to have that advance to have any hope of sort of preventing and containing the epidemic,
But on the other side, because treatment came so late, there are an estimated 320,000 children whose both parents have died from HIV. And our youth ambassador, Harry, was saying that's, just imagine the MCG filled three times with little children.
And that's the tragedy of it, because the children are not going to grow up with parents.
No.
They're not going to grow up, and they've got to learn their culture from somewhere. Mm-hmm. And they don't learn their culture. You learn your culture from your parents.
Yes.
Yeah. And your family, and if I would say that it probably goes through extended families. The disease has gone through extended families.
Yes, it's often taken grandparents. And what we've found is these children don't even know how to farm. Normally their parents would have taught them to farm.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are some very good programs run by Mozambicans, supported by Burnet, that teach these little kids how to grow maize, how to grow vegetables, how to do irrigation, how to raise chickens. Very, very important programs.
I guess that children learn very quickly.
They do, but someone has to teach them.
They have to be taught, yes. Yeah. It's a thing. And the Burnet Institute now, how many countries are Burnet in?
Currently working, we have offices in around eight countries. Mm-hmm. So those programs, we have our own staff. We have about 120 staff overseas. We also work in other countries through local organizations. Mm-hmm. So we don't have an office, we don't have a country representative, but we still have a presence. Mm-hmm. Our main programs are in Papua New Guinea, in Burma, that's our biggest program, in Tibet, in Laos, and in Mozambique. They're our main ones.
I think we'll just have a little break there and we'll play a little bit of music and come back and have a bit more of a chat. Right now, this is well, it's an appropriate disc, I think. Am I playing the right one? No, I'm not. Can't take my eyes off you from Boys Town Gang on Joy 94.9. And in the studio, we have Mike Toole from the Burnett Institute. Because it's World AIDS Day, we're talking about the worldwide epidemic. Mike, we were talking then about young people being affected and how we can get to them to stop it.
Yeah, last year, Gordon, around a half of the newly infected people were aged between 15 and 24. And, you know, the behaviours we know from so many studies, the behaviours that put those young people at risk commence very young. On average, you know, worldwide, with a few exceptions, young people start having sex when they're about 16. Maybe boys a little bit later and girls a little bit earlier. So, you know, they need to have the knowledge and information when they start having sex, before they have sex, before they start experimenting with drugs and alcohol. They need to understand the risks and they need factual information. Mm. You know, for a long time, billions of dollars of US taxpayers' money was spent on promoting abstinence without any evidence that abstinence actually is a feasible option.
I don't think it would be a feasible option.
In most cultures, it's just not on. And so if you promote abstinence without providing young people with information on what is risky, then there's the danger that when they do, let's say, give in and start having sex, mm-hmm. That they won't have safe sex. And there's some evidence in the US that kids who joined or signed up to abstinence programs had less safe sex when they did start having sex than those that did not sign up to those programs.
Right, right, yeah.
So the other important thing with young people is not to preach to them and not to sort of tell them what to do.
Hmm. Which older people tend to do.
They do,
course,
yep, yes. And I have to bite my tongue myself sometimes. but what we try and do in all the countries where we work with young people is to put them centrally in the program, have them gather information on their peers or their friends' behavior to identify what's risky and what's not, get them to come up with the best ways of communicating with young people, because often older people might come up with a poster or a boring flip chart or brochure that won't have any impact. So we believe strongly in youth leadership programs. We have mentorship programs, for example, in Papua New Guinea, where in Melanesian society, young people are just not taken very seriously. So we think these programs are very important to build the self-confidence of young people. It's one thing to know that a condom prevents HIV. It's another to negotiate using a condom during sex.
Yeah.
And that goes for men and women, but particularly, of course, for young women.
And, of course, you've got to make condoms freely available.
And making them available in a way that young people are not going to feel embarrassed by having to go and ask an older person, perhaps at a pharmacy, for a condom. So making sure they're everywhere and that they're easily available. And, of course, that people know what to do.
Of course, talking about sex to in some societies would be almost
very
a
difficult.
No-no.
Yep.
You know, you wouldn't be able to talk to people about it at all.
Let alone getting around to some of the more sensitive forms of sex, such as male-male sex in some societies, as it was in our society only 20 years ago. It's quite difficult to broach that subject. And yet our studies show in Southeast Asia that a much higher percentage of young men have sex with other men than here in our own society.
Truly.
And I think that's probably because in our own society we've evolved sexually into fairly rigid categories of sexuality. You're either gay or you're straight. If you're gay, you have sex with men. If you're straight, you have sex with women. Mm-hmm. That's for men. In a country where I've done a lot of work, like Laos or Papua New Guinea or Cambodia, Vietnam, it's not quite so rigid. So you can be a straight young man who just doesn't have the opportunity to have sex with a woman, may even think having sex with a man is safer because all the education's been about the danger of having sex with a female sex worker. So you may have anal sex without knowing that that's the highest risk behavior. So we try and integrate information, for example, on anal sex into all our education for young people, be they men, women, straight, gay.
And what about bisexual men? Do they?
Yeah, well, that's quite common. Not sure if I actually believe in the sexual identity bisexual. I think just about everyone has a preference. But in terms of behaviour, certainly in Southeast Asia, there's evidence of maybe up to 1 in 5 young men has sex with both men and women. We did a survey last year in Laos where we tested young men for HIV. And these were men who acknowledged having sex with a man in the previous 6 months. 6% were positive, and more than half of them had had sex with a woman within the previous 3 months. So our prevention with those young men takes into account that they may infect other young men and they may infect other young women, perhaps even their wives in subsequent years.
So all in all, it's still a raging epidemic.
It is. We've mentioned a few reasons to be optimistic, but 3 million people acquiring a potentially deadly virus every year is something that surely we just can't take as business as usual.
And there doesn't seem to be a vaccine on the market or anything like that. They're working hard.
Not for another decade, I'd say. No. Yeah, and even that may be optimistic.
Right. Well, Mike, we'll just hope that it gets better.
Yep.
Thank you very much for coming in. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.